governments and the CIA. By 2006, the value of the base contract for their company with all options exercised was in excess of $180 million. As of May 2007, Company Y had hired, redacted, former CIA staff officers, many of whom had previously been involved with the CIA's detention and interrogation program. Company Y's chief operating officer was the former chief of Redacted, the division of the CIA supervising the renditions and detention group. In addition, Company Y hired at least redacted CIA security protective officers to work on Company Y's CIA contracts. In March 2006, a list of projected staff and contractors within CIA's renditions and detention group included redacted separate positions. Of those redacted positions, redacted 73% were for contractors, the majority of whom were contractors for Company Y. By June 2007, RDG reported having redacted staff officers and redacted contractors. By 2008, RDG had a total of redacted positions with redacted staff officers and redacted 85% contractors, according to the CIA. The CIA's contract with Company Y was terminated in mid-2009. From the time of the company's creation in 2005 through the closeout of its contract in 2010, the CIA paid Company Y more than $75 million for services in conjunction with the CIA's detention and interrogation program. The CIA also certified Company Y's office in Redacted as a secure compartmented information facility, SCIF, which required a CIA officer to be detailed to Redacted and provided company-wide access to CIA internal computer networks at its facility. In 2008, the CIA authorized an additional payment to company-wide of approximately $570,000 after company-wide indicated that it had incurred costs for conducting counter-surveillance of its offices when Redacted appeared in the press in conjunction with the program. The CIA agreed to a $5 million indemnification contract for the company that covered, among other expenses, criminal prosecution. Company Y hired a prominent Redacted law firm for representation in 2007 and billed the CIA $1.1 million for legal expenses from 2007 through 2012 per its indemnification agreement. Part of these expenses included legal presentation at a committee staff briefing by Swigert and Dunbar on November Redacted 2008. Under the CIA's indemnification contract, the CIA is obligated to pay company-wise legal expenses through 2021. 8. The CIA's detention and interrogation program ends. On December 5, 2007, fewer than 9 months after Director Hayden told the European Union that the CIA's detention and interrogation program was not a CIA program, but America's program, the House-Senate Conference for the Fiscal Year 2008 Intelligence Authorization Act voted to include an amendment that banned coercive interrogation techniques and established the Army Field Manual on Human Intelligence Collector Operations as the interrogation standard for all U.S. government interrogations. The conference report passed both the House and the Senate with bipartisan majorities. On March 8, 2008, President Bush vetoed the Intelligence Authorization Act for fiscal year 2008 that banned coercive interrogations. In a radio address explaining the decision, the president stated, "The bill Congress sent me would take away one of the most valuable tools in the war on terror, the CIA program to detain and question key terrorist leaders and operatives." Addressing the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, President Bush stated that the main reason the CIA program has been effective is that it allows the CIA to use specialized interrogation procedures to question a small number of the most dangerous terrorists under careful supervision. The president stated that the CIA program had a proven track record, and that the CIA obtained critical intelligence as a result of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques related to the Camp Le Monnier plotting, the Karachi plotting, the Second Wave plotting, and the Heathrow Airport plotting. The president then repeated a warning the CIA had previously provided to the White House that to restrict the CIA to interrogation methods in the Army Field Manual could cost American lives. As is described in the summary and detailed more extensively in the full committee study, the CIA's representations to the White House regarding the role of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in the thwarting of the reference plots were inaccurate. On March the 11th, 2008, by a vote of 225-188, the House of Representatives failed to override the presidential veto. In December 2008 and January 2009, CIA officers briefed the transition team for President-elect Barack Obama on the CIA's detention and interrogation program. CIA Director Hayden prepared a statement that relayed, "Despite what you have heard or read in a variety of public fora, these enhanced interrogation techniques and this program did work." The prepared materials included inaccurate information on the operation and management of the CIA's detention and interrogation program, as well as the same set of examples of the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques that the CIA had provided to policymakers over several years. The examples provided were nearly entirely inaccurate. On January 22, 2009, President Obama issued Executive Order 13491, which required the CIA to close as expeditiously as possible any detention facilities that it currently operates and not operate any such detention facility in the future. The executive order prohibited any U.S. government employee from using interrogation techniques other than those in the Army Field Manual 2-22.3 on Human Intelligence Collector Operations.
3. Intelligence acquired and CIA representations on the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to multiple constituencies. A. Background on CIA effectiveness representations. From 2002 through 2009, in order to obtain policy authorizations and legal approvals, the CIA made a series of representations to officials at the White House, the Department of Justice, and the Congress, asserting that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were uniquely effective and necessary to provide otherwise unavailable intelligence that the U.S. government could not obtain from other sources. The CIA further represented that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques saved lives and enabled the CIA to disrupt terrorist plots, capture additional terrorists, and collect a high volume of critical intelligence on Al-Qaeda. The Department of Justice used these representations of effectiveness to assess whether the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were legal. Policymakers at the White House used these representations and the legal analysis by the Department of Justice to assess whether the CIA interrogation program should be approved as a matter of policy, and members of Congress relied on the CIA representations in overseeing and assessing the program, providing funding, and crafting related legislation. In CIA presentations to the executive and legislative branches, the CIA represented that other parties had consented to or endorsed the CIA's interrogation program. As an example, during a policy review of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in July 2003, the CIA informed a subset of the National Security Council principals that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was approved by the Attorney General and was fully disclosed to the SSCI and HPSCI leadership. In the same presentation, the CIA represented that the CIA interrogation program had produced significant intelligence information that had, in the view of CIA professionals, saved lives. The CIA then provided examples of attacks averted as a direct result of the CIA interrogation program and warned policymakers that termination of this program will result in loss of life, possibly extensive. When the CIA was asked by White House officials to review and provide further evidence for the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in 2004, the CIA responded that it was difficult, if not impossible, to conduct such a review, but assured White House officials that this program works, the techniques are effective, and the program produces results. The results provided by the CIA consisted of the disruption of specific terrorist plots and the capture of specific terrorists. The CIA further represented that the information acquired as a result of CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was unique and otherwise unavailable. These specific CIA claims played an especially important role in the Department of Justice's legal review of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Department of Justice documents stated that an analysis of the legality of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was a highly context-specific, fact-dependent question, and highlighted the importance of the CIA representation that the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques produced substantial quantities of otherwise unavailable actionable intelligence and were largely responsible for preventing a subsequent attack within the United States.
B. Past efforts to review the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. During the period in which the CIA's detention and interrogation program was operational, from 2002 to 2009, there were three reviews that addressed the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. 1. The CIA Office of Inspector General's Special Review, released in May 2004. 2. An internal review conducted by two senior CIA officers in 2004. And 3. A 2005 Blue Ribbon panel consisting of two individuals not employed by the CIA. According to CIA records, as of the spring of 2007, the CIA had not conducted any other studies on the effectiveness of interrogation techniques. Each of the previous reviews relied on interviews with CIA personnel involved in the program, as well as documents prepared by CIA personnel, which represented that the CIA interrogation program was effective and that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques had enabled the CIA to disrupt terrorist plots, capture additional terrorists, and collect a high volume of critical intelligence on Al-Qaeda. CIA personnel represented, "This is information that CTC could not have gotten any other way." There are no indications in CIA records that any of the past reviews attempted to independently validate the intelligence claims related to the CIA's use of its enhanced interrogation techniques that were presented by CIA personnel in interviews and in documents. As such, no previous review confirmed whether the specific intelligence cited by the CIA was acquired from a CIA detainee during or after being subjected to the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, or if the intelligence acquired was otherwise unknown to the United States government, otherwise unavailable, and therefore uniquely valuable.
C. The origins of CIA representations regarding the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques as having saved lives, thwarted plots, and captured terrorists. Before the CIA took custody of its first detainee, CIA attorneys researched the limits of coercive interrogations and the legal definitions of torture. On November 26, 2001, CIA Office of General Counsel, OGC, attorneys circulated a draft legal memorandum entitled Hostile Interrogations, Legal Considerations for CIA Officers. The memorandum listed interrogation techniques considered to be torture by a foreign government and a specific non-governmental organization, including cold torture, forced positions, enforced physical exhaustion, sensory deprivation, perceptual deprivation, social deprivation, threats and humiliation, conditioning techniques, and deprivation of sleep. The draft memorandum described various prohibitions on torture and the potential use of necessity as a legal defense against charges of torture, stating, "It would, therefore, be a novel application of the necessity defense to avoid prosecution of U.S. officials who tortured to obtain information that saved many lives. A policy decision must be made with regard to U.S. use of torture in light of our obligations under international law, with consideration given to the circumstances and to international opinion on our current campaign against terrorism. States may be very unwilling to call the U.S. to task for torture when it resulted in saving thousands of lives. On February 1, 2002, a CTC attorney researched the impact of the application of the Geneva Conventions, GC, on future CIA interrogation activities. The attorney wrote, "If the detainee is a POW and enjoys GC coverage, then the optic becomes how legally defensible is a particular act that probably violates the convention, but ultimately saves lives. I believe that, a named CIA attorney's papers reflecting on necessity and anticipatory self-defense are the two most obvious defenses available." The Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel, OLC, included the necessity defense in its August 1, 2002 memorandum to the White House counsel, determining, among other things, that under the current circumstances, necessity or self-defense may justify interrogation methods that might violate the criminal prohibition against torture. The OLC memorandum states, "It appears to us that under the current circumstances, the necessity defense could be successfully maintained in response to an allegation of a Section 2340A violation. Under these circumstances, a detainee may possess information that could enable the United States to prevent attacks that potentially could equal or surpass the September 11th attacks in their magnitude. Clearly, any harm that might occur during an interrogation would pale to insignificance compared to the harm avoided by preventing such an attack, which could take hundreds or thousands of lives." According to a report by the Department of Justice Office of Professional Responsibility, OPR, released in July 2009, Deputy Assistant Attorney General John Yoo acknowledged that the CIA may have indirectly suggested the new sections related to commander-in-chief authority and possible defenses, including the necessity defense, by asking him what would happen in a case where an interrogator went over the line and inadvertently violated the statute. Yoo also told the OPR that he drafted those relevant sections. Another senior Department of Justice lawyer at the time, Patrick Philbin, informed the OPR that when he told Yoo that the sections were superfluous and should be removed, Yoo responded, "They want it in there." The CIA's former Deputy General Counsel John Rizzo told the OPR that the CIA did not request the addition of the sections. In his response to the OPR report, Assistant Attorney General Jay Bybee stated that the ticking time bomb that could justify the necessity defense was, in fact, a real-world scenario. According to Bybee, the OLC attorneys working on the August 1, 2002 memo had been briefed on the apprehension of Jose Padilla on May 8, 2002. Padilla was believed to have built and planted a dirty bomb. The August 1, 2002 memorandum states that the interrogation of captured Al-Qaeda operatives allegedly allowed U.S. intelligence and law enforcement agencies to track Padilla and to detain him upon his entry into the United States. This information was inaccurate. With the issuance on August 1, 2002 of a second OLC memorandum specific to Abu Zubaydah, the CIA initiated the use of its enhanced interrogation techniques. After the CIA subjected Abu Zubaydah and other CIA detainees to the techniques, the CIA made increasingly stronger assertions about the effectiveness of the CIA's interrogation program, eventually asserting that the CIA interrogation program saved lives and that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was necessary as the intelligence obtained could not have been acquired in any other way. Many of the representations made by the CIA about the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were first made in the spring of 2003 and evolved over the course of the year and into early 2004. In April 2003, CIA officers told the CIA's Office of Inspector General, OIG, that KSM, who had been subjected to the techniques between March, redacted, 2003, and March 25, 2003, was still not fully cooperative. For example, on April 3, 2003, more than a week after the CIA had discontinued the use of its enhanced interrogation techniques on KSM, the deputy chief of Alex Station, redacted, informed the OIG that KSM had made remarkable progress, but there was a lot more to be done. Redacted did not cite any specific intelligence obtained from KSM in this context.
Note 1077. On April 21, 2003, a CTC analyst told the IG that KSM has not provided anything significant to date. On April 30, 2003, one of KSM's interrogators pointed to information on hijackings, bridges in New York, and nuclear plants, and information on hidden uranium, which was never found.
On June 27, 2003, more than 3 months after the CIA had ceased using its enhanced interrogation techniques against KSM, CTC Chief of Operations, redacted, told the OIG that he was convinced that KSM knows more and is just waiting for us to ask the right questions. Redacted then provided two examples of information that KSM had not provided until he was asked specifically about the matters by CIA interrogators. Information on the tallest building in California plot, also known as the Second Wave plot, and the inclusion of a building in Canary Wharf as a target in the plotting against Heathrow Airport. Asked if he could think of any instances in which information from CIA detainees had led to the arrest of a terrorist, Redacted stated only that Majid Khan provided information that led to the arrest of Ayman Faris by the FBI. This information was inaccurate, as Majid Khan was not in CIA custody when he provided information on Ayman Faris. Redacted represented to the OIG that the CIA's interrogation program was very effective and that the intelligence obtained from CIA detainees was the main criteria for judging the success of the program. Specifically, intelligence that has allowed CTC to take other terrorists off the street and to prevent terrorist attacks. Redacted also told the OIG that the information obtained from CIA interrogations was information that CTC could not have gotten any other way. On June 26, 2003, President Bush issued a statement for the United Nations International Day in support of victims of torture. That statement, referenced in multiple news articles, relayed that the United States is committed to the worldwide elimination of torture, and we are leading this fight by example. I call on all governments to join with the United States and the community of law-abiding nations in prohibiting, investigating, and prosecuting all acts of torture, and in undertaking to prevent other cruel and unusual punishment. The following day, after the Washington Post published an article on the administration's detainee policy, CIA Deputy General Counsel John Rizzo called John Bellinger, the legal advisor to the National Security Council. According to an email from Rizzo to other senior CIA officers, Rizzo called Bellinger to express our surprise and concern at some of the statements attributed to the administration in the piece, particularly the presidential statement on the UN International Day in support of victims of torture, as well as a quote from the Deputy White House Press Secretary Scott McClellan that all prisoners being held by the USG are being treated humanely. While Rizzo expressed the view that the presidential statement did not appear to contain anything we can't live with, Rizzo conveyed to senior CIA leaders that it might well be appropriate for us to seek written reaffirmation by some senior White House official that the agency's ongoing practices are to continue. On July 3, 2003, DCI George Tenet sent a memorandum to National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice seeking reaffirmation of the administration's support for the CIA's detention and interrogation policies and practices. The memorandum stated that the reaffirmation was sought because recent administration responses to inquiries and resulting media reporting about the administration's position have created the impression that these interrogation techniques are not used by U.S. personnel and are no longer approved as a policy matter. While the CIA was preparing to meet with the White House on the reaffirmation of the CIA interrogation program, CIA personnel provided additional inaccurate information about the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to the OIG, as well as to senior CIA leadership. These inaccurate representations described the thwarting of specific plots and the capture of specific terrorists attributed to the interrogation of CIA detainees and the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. On July 16, 2003, Deputy Chief Alex Station, Redacted, was interviewed again by the OIG. In this interview, Redacted asserted that KSM provided information that helped lead to the arrest of Ayman Faris, Uzair Paracha, Saleh Al-Mari, Majid Khan, and Ammar al-Baluchi. These representations were almost entirely inaccurate. Redacted also informed the OIG that information from CIA detainees provided a wealth of information about al-Qaeda plots, including a terrorist plot in Saudi Arabia against Israel, a plot against the U.S. consulate in Karachi, Pakistan, a plot against Heathrow Airport and Canary Wharf, a plot to derail trains, a plot against subways, a gas station plot, a plot against the tallest building in California, a plot against suspension bridges, and a plot to poison water supplies. Much of this information was inaccurate. According to OIG records, on the question of whether actual plots had been thwarted, Redacted opined that since the operatives involved in many of the above plots had been arrested, CTC had, in effect, thwarted the operations. Redacted provided a list to the OIG of terrorists captured and the plots with which they were associated. None of the individuals listed by Redacted were captured as a result of reporting from CIA detainees. During the same period in 2003, CIA officers were compiling similar information for CIA leadership. On July 18, 2003, the chief of Alex Station, Redacted, wrote an email to Alex Station officers requesting information on the value and impact of CIA detainee information on behalf of the CIA Renditions Group, RDG, which he stated was being compiled for senior CIA leadership. Redacted wrote that, "One way to assist now is to provide input to RDG on highlights of intel and ops reporting from the detainees, in particular, reporting that helped reveal or stop plots, reporting that clinched the identity of terrorist suspects, etc." The first portion of the response compiled by Alex Station was drafted by Deputy Chief of Alex Station, Redacted, who wrote that CIA detainee reporting plays a key role in our ability to identify and capture Al-Qaeda terrorists, including those who were planning to attack inside the United States. In an email, Redacted wrote that, "The ability of the detainees to identify many operatives previously unknown to us or to the FBI resulted in the successful capture and detention of several terrorists, and that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was key to acquiring this information on these operatives. As examples of operatives previously unknown to the CIA and the FBI and identified by CIA detainees, Redacted cited Jose Padilla, Binyam Mohammed, Majid Khan, Ayman Faris, and Saif al-Rahman Paracha. These representations were inaccurate." Redacted email concluded, "Simply put, detainee information has saved countless American lives inside the U.S. and abroad. We believe there is no doubt Al-Qaeda would have succeeded in launching additional attacks in the U.S. and that the information obtained from these detainees through the use of enhanced measures was key to unlocking this information. It is our assessment that if CIA loses the ability to interrogate and use enhanced measures in a responsible way, we will not be able to effectively prosecute this war." The information relayed from Alex Station to RDG in July 2003 for CIA leadership also included information from a CIA assessment entitled Significant Detainee Reporting. That document included information that was largely congruent with CIA records. It stated that KSM provided details on the Heathrow Airport plot and the Karachi plots only after being confronted with the capture of Khalad bin Attash and Amara Baluchi. And with regard to plots inside the United States, KSM had only admitted to plots that had been abandoned or already disrupted. That KSM fabricated information in order to tell CIA interrogators what he thought they wanted to hear, and that KSM generally only provided information when boxed in by information already known to CIA debriefers. This information was not included in CIA representations to policymakers later that month. On July 29, 2003, as a result of DCI Tenet's July 3, 2003 request seeking reaffirmation of the CIA's detention and interrogation policies and practices, Tenet and CIA General Counsel Scott Mueller conducted a briefing for a subset of the National Security Council principals. According to a CIA memorandum, Mueller represented that CIA detainees subject to the use of enhanced techniques of one kind or another had produced significant intelligence information that had, in the view of CIA professionals, saved lives. The CIA briefing provided the results of using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques in briefing slides with the heading, "Results, Major Threat Info." The slides represented that KSM provided information on attack plans against U.S. Capitol, other U.S. landmarks, attacks against Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, against towers, subways, trains, reservoirs, Hebrew centers, nuclear power plants, and the Heathrow and Canary Wharf plot. The slides also represented that KSM identified Ayman Faris, the Majid Khan family, and Saif al-Rahman Paracha. These representations were largely inaccurate.
Note 1104. CIA records indicate that the attacks, attack plans, and targets discussed by KSM were well known to the intelligence community prior to any reporting from CIA detainees, or were merely ideas for attacks that were proposed but never operationalized. The CIA briefing slides made no mention of KSM withholding or fabricating information during and after the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques.
The CIA slides represented that major threat information was obtained from the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on CIA detainee Abd al-Rahim al-Nashiri regarding U.S. Navy ships in the Straits of Hormuz. This representation was inaccurate and omitted material facts.
Note 1105. CIA records indicate that al-Nashiri provided details on multiple terrorist plots, including plans to target ships in the Strait of Hormuz, prior to his CIA detention and the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. With regard to the targeting of ships in the Strait of Hormuz, this information was provided by al-Nashiri while he was still in foreign government custody and was disseminated in CIA intelligence reports prior to his CIA detention.
The CIA slides further indicated that major threat information was obtained from the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against CIA detainee Ramzi bin al-Shib, specifically that bin al-Shib identified Hawsawi and provided major threat information on attacks against nuclear power plants, Hebrew centers. This representation was inaccurate and omitted material facts.
Note 1106. Al-Hawsawi was linked to the September 11, 2001 attacks and targeted by the CIA and other intelligence agencies prior to bin al-Shib's capture. Al-Hawsawi's arrest on March 1, 2003 was unrelated to any reporting from CIA detainees. With regard to the referenced attacks, no operational plots targeting the sites referenced were ever identified by the CIA. Personnel at CIA headquarters concluded in 2005 that the most significant intelligence derived from Ramzi bin al-Shib was obtained prior to his rendition to CIA custody and the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. According to a 2005 CIA assessment, the most significant reporting from Ramzi bin al-Shib on future attacks was background information related to al-Qaeda's plans to attack Heathrow Airport. Ramzi bin al-Shib provided the majority of this information in mid-October 2002, while in the custody of a foreign government and prior to being transferred to CIA custody.
In the context of major threats that were countered and attacks averted, the CIA slides represented that major threat information was obtained from the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Khalid bin Attash on an attack against the U.S. consulate in Karachi. This representation was inaccurate. The CIA slides further represented that major threat information was obtained from the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques on CIA detainee Abu Zubaydah, resulting in the identification of Jose Padilla, Richard Reed, as well as information on attacks on banks, subways, petroleum, and aircraft industries. These representations were inaccurate. The briefing slides, which contained additional inaccuracies detailed in Volume 2 of the committee study, were used, at least in part, for CIA briefings for Secretary of State Powell and Secretary of Defense Rumsfeld, as well as for Assistant Attorney General Jack Goldsmith. In subsequent interviews of CIA personnel, the OIG received information that contradicted other CIA representations about the CIA's detention and interrogation program. The chief of the redacted branch of the UBL group at CTC described at length how the assets of Majid Khan and Ayman Faris were unrelated to reporting from CIA detainees. The deputy director for law enforcement for the FBI's counterterrorism division told the OIG how Uzair Paracha and FBI operational activities were ultimately responsible for the capture of Saif al-Rahman Paracha. The chief of targeting and special requirements for CTC's al-Qaeda department and former chief of the Abu Zubaydah task force, redacted, told the OIG that the often cited example of Zubaydah identifying Padilla is not quite accurate. According to redacted, not only did Abu Zubaydah not tell us who Padilla was, his information alone would never have led us to Padilla. Redacted stated that the Pakistanis had told the CIA about Jose Padilla and his partner prior to Abu Zubaydah providing any information on the pair, relaying, In essence, CTC got lucky. At the same time, however, CIA personnel provided inaccurate examples of the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques to the OIG. The deputy chief of the Al-Qaeda Department of CTC told the OIG that KSM gave us Majid Khan and Nusair Paracha. Deputy DCI John McLaughlin told the OIG that information from KSM led to the capture of Majid Khan, which in turn led to the capture of Hambali. McLaughlin also represented that the capture of Richard Reed was a result of modus operandi information obtained from Abu Zubaydah. These representations were inaccurate.
Note, 1116. This information was included in the CIA's July 2003 briefing slides. Richard Reed was arrested in December 2001, prior to the capture of Abu Zubaydah.
In addition to these specific inaccurate examples, CIA leadership made additional general claims to the OIG about the effectiveness of the CIA interrogation program that highlighted the critical threat information that could only be acquired by using the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against CIA detainees. Jose Rodriguez, then CTC director, told the CIA OIG that the use of EITs has saved lives and prevented terrorist operations from occurring. Deputy DCI McLaughlin told the OIG that he believes the use of EITs has proven critical to CIA's efforts in the war on terrorism. DDO Pavitt stated that the program was invaluable to U.S. national security, that American lives have been saved as a result of information received from detainees, and that the CIA has been able to obtain information that would not have been obtained without the use of EITs. According to OIG records, DCI Tenet stated he firmly believes that the interrogation program, and specifically the use of EITs, has saved many lives. Tenet added that the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was extremely valuable in obtaining enormous amounts of critical threat information, and that he did not believe that the information could have been gained any other way. On January 2, 2004, CIA Inspector General John Helgerson provided a draft of the OIG special review entitled Counterterrorism Detention and Interrogation Program to senior CIA officials for comment. The draft special review, which was based on numerous interviews of CIA personnel, as well as additional research by the OIG, described the origins of the CIA's detention and interrogation program, the detention sites that were operational at the time of the review, and the guidance that had been provided on both interrogation and detention. The draft also identified a number of unauthorized interrogation techniques that had been used, and concluded that, in a number of cases, CIA interrogations went well beyond what was articulated in the written DOJ legal opinion of August 1, 2002. The draft report repeated the inaccurate examples of the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques that had been conveyed by CIA officers to OIG personnel, but nonetheless concluded, with the capture of some of the operatives for the above-mentioned plots, it is not clear whether these plots have been thwarted or if they remain viable or even if they were fabricated in the first place. This review did not uncover any evidence that these plots were imminent. After reviewing the draft special review, including the OIG's qualified conclusions about the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, the CIA's CTC began preparing a highly critical response. In preparation for that response, Redacted, CTC Legal, Redacted, requested additional information that could be used as evidence for the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques from CTC personnel. Redacted sent an email seeking a list of specific plots that had been thwarted by the use of detainee reporting that we acquired following the use of enhanced techniques. Redacted noted that he would compile the information, emphasizing that hundreds or thousands of innocent lives have been saved as a result of our use of those techniques. In a separate email, Redacted emphasized that it was critical that the information establish direct links between the application of the enhanced interrogation techniques and the production of intelligence that directly enabled the saving of innocent lives, that the intelligence obtained after the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques be significantly different in nature from the intelligence acquired before the use of the enhanced techniques, and that the information be absolutely ironclad and demonstrably supported by cable citations, analytical pieces, or what have you. Redacted further noted that we can expect to need to present these data to appropriately cleared personnel at the IG and on the Hill, to the Attorney General, and quite possibly to the President at some point, and they must be absolutely verifiable. He concluded, It is not an exaggeration to say that the future of the program and the consequent saving of innocent lives may depend substantially upon the input you provide. Responding to the request for information, Deputy Chief of Alex Station, redacted, sent an email describing intelligence from KSM in which she wrote, "Let's be forward-leaning." The content of redacted's email would serve as a template on which future justifications for the CIA program and the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were based. Redacted's email stated that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed's information alone has saved at least several hundred, possibly thousands, of lives. She then wrote that KSM identified Ayman Faris, who is now serving time in the U.S. for his support to al-Qaeda, and identified a photograph of Saleh al-Mari, whom the FBI suspected of some involvement with al-Qaeda, but against whom we had no concrete information, adding that al-Mari is now being held on a material witness warrant. Redacted's email stated that KSM provided information on Majid Khan, who is now in custody, identified a mechanism for al-Qaeda to smuggle explosives into the U.S., and identified Jafar al-Tayyar. Redacted's email also represented that after the use of enhanced interrogation techniques, Abu Zubaydah grew into what is now our most cooperative detainee, and that Abu Zubaydah's information produced concrete results that helped save lives. These representations were almost entirely inaccurate. And as she had in an interview with the OIG, Redacted, former chief of the Abu Zubaydah task force, refuted this view, writing in an email that Abu Zubaydah never really gave "this is the plot" type of information, that Abu Zubaydah discussed Jose Padilla prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, and that he never really gave us actionable intel to get them. Separately, Deputy Chief of Alex Station, Redacted, forwarded additional inaccurate information from CIA personnel in Alex Station to CTC Legal related to KSM, al-Nashiri, and Hanbali.
Note, 1134. As noted, in an August 19, 2003 memorandum for the record detailing Redacted's interview with the Office of the Inspector General, Redacted told the OIG that the often-cited example of Zubaydah identifying Padilla is not quite accurate, and that not only did Abu Zubaydah not tell us who Padilla was, his information alone would never have led us to Padilla. Noting that the Pakistani government had told the CIA about Jose Padilla and his partner prior to Abu Zubaydah providing any information on the pair, Redacted stated, in essence, CTC got lucky. This information was not included in the draft or final OIG special review.
On February 27, 2004, DDO Pavitt submitted his formal response to the OIG draft special review in the form of a memorandum to the Inspector General. Pavitt urged the CIA OIG not to shy away from the conclusion that our efforts have thwarted attacks and saved lives, and to make it clear as well that the EITs, including the Water Board, have been indispensable to our successes. Pavitt's memorandum included an attachment describing the successes of CIA's counterterrorism detention and interrogation activities and why the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were necessary. The attachment stated, "Information we received from detained terrorists as a result of the lawful use of enhanced interrogation techniques, EITs, has almost certainly saved countless American lives inside the United States and abroad. The evidence points clearly to the fact that without the use of such techniques, we and our allies would have suffered major terrorist attacks involving hundreds, if not thousands, of casualties." The attachment to Pavitt's memorandum repeated much of the inaccurate information contained in Deputy Chief of Alex Station, Redacted's, email about KSM and Abu Zubaydah, as well as the additional information Alex Station personnel provided on KSM, al-Nashiri, and Hanbali. In Pavitt's memorandum, every intelligence success claim was preceded with some version of the phrase, "as a result of the lawful use of EITs." Inaccurate information provided to the OIG during interviews and in the Pavitt memorandum was included in the final version of the OIG's special review. The relevant portion of the special review, including much of the inaccurate information, has been declassified.
Note, 1141. A review of CIA records found that almost all of the information in the Pavitt memorandum was inaccurate and unsupported by CIA interrogation and intelligence records. The CIA's June 2013 response states that CIA officers generally provided accurate information to the Inspector General on the operation and effectiveness of the program, and that, with rare exceptions, CIA officers provided accurate assessments to the OIG.
As redacted, CTC Legal, redacted, anticipated in his February 10, 2004 email, much of the information provided to the Inspector General on the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques was later provided to policymakers and the Department of Justice as evidence for the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. In late 2004, as the National Security Council was considering endgame options for CIA detainees, the CIA proposed a public relations campaign that would include disclosures about the effectiveness of the CIA program. CIA talking points prepared in December 2004 for the DCI to use with National Security Council principals stated that, if done cleverly, selected disclosure of intelligence results could heighten the anxiety of terrorists at large about the sophistication of USG methods and underscore the seriousness of American commitment to prosecute aggressively the war on terrorism. The following month, the CIA proposed that the public information campaign include details on the intelligence gained and lives saved in HVD interrogations. There was no immediate decision by the National Security Council about an endgame for CIA detainees or the proposed public information campaign. In early April 2005, redacted, Chief of Alec Station asked that information on the success of the CIA's detention and interrogation program be compiled in anticipation of interviews of CIA personnel by Tom Brokaw of NBC News. The first draft included effectiveness claims relating to the second wave plotting, the Heathrow Airport plotting, the Karachi plotting, and the identification of a second shoe bomber. A subsequent draft sought to limit the information provided to what was already in the public record and included assertions about Issa al-Hindi, Ayman Faris, and Sajid Badat. That day, Deputy Director of CTC Philip Mudd told, redacted, that we either get out and sell or we get hammered, which has implications beyond the media. Congress reads it, cuts our authorities, messes up our budget. The following day, the draft was cleared for release to the media.
Note, 1147. The draft discussed Issa al-Hindi, who had been referenced in the 9/11 Commission report, stating that, prior to KSM's reporting, the U.S. government was not aware of Issa's casing activity, nor did we know his true identity. It added that KSM's reporting was the impetus for an intense investigation culminating in Issa's identification and arrest. The draft also included two examples that had not been in official public documents, but had been described in press stories. The first was that KSM led U.S. investigators to an Ohio truck driver named Ayman Faris. The second was that KSM's confessions were also instrumental in determining the identity of Sajid Badat, the second shoe bomber. As described elsewhere, these claims were incongruent with CIA records. At least one earlier media account of KSM's purported role in the arrest of Ayman Faris was provided in a book by an author who had extensive access to CIA officials. The CIA's cooperation with the author is described elsewhere in this summary, as well as in more detail in the full committee study.
On April 20, 2005, the same examples were circulated as part of an anticipated official public campaign to promote the effectiveness of the still-classified CIA program. In response, redacted, CTC Legal, redacted, expressed concern that the examples cited, while true, and perhaps as far as we can go, are not nearly the most striking examples of lives saved. Referencing KSM's reporting on Ayman Faris, noted that we risk making ourselves look silly if the best we can do is the Brooklyn Bridge. Perhaps we should omit specific examples rather than damn ourselves with faint praise. Redacted, who offered the Heathrow Airport plot as an example, made the following suggestion. Can Office of Public Affairs be more strongly declarative? While we can't provide details, or maybe we can, the program has produced intelligence that has directly saved hundreds, thousands of American and other innocent lives. Redacted then attached claims originally compiled in February 2004 for the purpose of responding to the draft OIG special review, which he wrote, described some of the actionable intelligence acquired as a result of the program and the lawful use of such techniques. The examples were inaccurate. On June 24, 2005, Dateline NBC aired a program accompanied by several online articles which quoted CIA Director Goss and Deputy Director of CTC Mudd as well as anonymous top American intelligence officials. Among other claims, NBC reported that the capture of Ramzi bin al-Shib led ultimately to the captures of KSM and Khalad bin Attash. This information was inaccurate. At the end of 2005, congressional concerns about the treatment of detainees again spurred interest at the CIA for public disclosures on the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. Specifically, congressional action on the Detainee Treatment Act, the McCain Amendment, prompted a CIA attorney working at the Office of the Director of National Intelligence to express concern that legislative support was needed for the CIA to continue to use its enhanced interrogation techniques, and that a public information campaign would be required to garner that support. The CIA attorney described the striking similarities between the public debate surrounding the McCain Amendment and the situation in Israel in 1999, in which the Israeli Supreme Court had ruled that several techniques were possibly permissible but require some form of legislative sanction, and that the Israeli government ultimately got limited legislative authority for a few specific techniques. The CIA attorney then wrote, "Once this became a political reality here, it became incumbent on the administration to publicly put forth some facts if it wanted to preserve these powers. Yet, to date, the administration has refused to put forth any specific examples of significant intelligence it adduced as a result of using any technique that could not reasonably be construed as cruel, inhuman, or degrading. Not even any historical stuff from 3 or 4 years ago. What conclusions are to be drawn from the utter failure to offer a specific justification? That no such proof exists? That the administration does not recognize the legitimacy of the political process on this issue? Or that need to reserve the right to use these techniques really is not important enough to justify the compromise of even historical intelligence?" As described in more detail in the full committee study, the administration sought legislative support to continue the CIA's detention interrogation program and chose to do so by publicly disclosing the program in a 2006 speech by President Bush. The speech, which was based on CIA-provided information and vetted by the CIA, included numerous inaccurate representations about the CIA program and the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. The CIA's vetting of the speech is detailed in CIA validation documents, which include CIA concurrence and citations to records to support specific passages of the speech. For example, the CIA validation of remarks document includes the following: "Questioning the detainees in this program has given us information that has saved innocent lives by helping us to stop new attacks, here in the United States and across the world." CIA concurs with this assessment. Information from detainees prevented, among others, the West Coast airliner plot, a plot to blow up an apartment building in the United States, a plot to attack various targets in the United Kingdom, and plots against targets in Karachi and the Arabian Gulf. These attacks would undoubtedly have killed thousands. Multiple iterations of the CIA validation documents reflect changes to the speech as it was being prepared. 1 week before the scheduled speech, a passage in the draft speech made inaccurate claims about the role played by Abu Zubaydah in the capture of Ramzi bin al-Shib and the role of Abu Zubaydah and Ramzi bin al-Shib in the capture of KSM, but did not explicitly connect these claims to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques. In an August 31, 2006 email exchange, CIA officers proposed the following language for the speech. "That same year, information from Zubaydah led the CIA to the trail of one of KSM's accomplices, Ramzi bin al-Shib. Information from Zubaydah, together with information from Shib, gave the CIA insight into al-Qaeda's 9/11 attack planning and the importance of KSM. With the knowledge that KSM was the mastermind, redacted, Pakistani partners planned and mounted an operation that resulted in his eventual capture and detention." The August 31, 2006 email exchange included citations to CIA cables to support the proposed passage. However, neither the cables nor any other CIA records support the assertions.
Note, 1159. The cited cables describe Abu Zubaydah's June 2002 description of a meeting with Ramzi bin al-Shib, acquired prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah, and Abu Zubaydah's August 2002 reporting discussing the same meeting after the use of the techniques. Neither cable or any other CIA record indicates a connection between Abu Zubaydah's reporting on his meeting with bin al-Shib and bin al-Shib's capture. The cited cables also do not include information which was available to the CIA prior to the capture of Abu Zubaydah, highlighting KSM's importance. The cited cable describes Abu Zubaydah's April 2002 reporting prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, identifying KSM as Mukhtar and the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks. The citations did not include cables referencing information available to the CIA about KSM that was obtained prior to the capture of Abu Zubaydah, including information on KSM's alias Mukhtar and KSM's role in the September 11, 2001 attacks, as is detailed elsewhere in this summary. The cables also did not support the claim that information provided by Abu Zubaydah or Ramzi Ben al-Shib led to the capture of KSM. One cited cable related to the identification by Ramzi Ben al-Shib, while Ben al-Shib was in foreign government custody, of Ali Abdul Aziz Ali as Ammar. As described elsewhere in this summary, KSM was not captured as a result of information related to Ammar al-Baluchi. The email exchange listed two cables directly related to the capture of KSM. The first cable, from approximately a week before KSM's capture, described the CIA's operational use and value of the asset who led the CIA to KSM. The cable stated that CIA headquarters continues to be impressed with the evidence of the asset's access to redacted, KSM redacted associates, redacted. The second cable described KSM's capture, stating that it was based on locational information provided by the asset. Neither of the two cables cited to support the claim made any reference to Abu Zubaydah, Ramzi Ben al-Shib, or any other detainee in CIA or foreign government custody. The capture of KSM, including the role of the asset, referred to herein as Asset X, is detailed elsewhere in this summary and in greater detail in the full committee study.
Within a few days, the passage in the draft speech relating to the captures of Ramzi Ben al-Shib and KSM was modified to connect the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques against Abu Zubaydah to the capture of Ramzi Ben al-Shib. The updated draft now credited information from Abu Zubaydah and Ramzi Ben al-Shib with helping in the planning and execution of the operation that captured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. The updated draft speech stated, Zubaydah was questioned using these interrogation procedures, and he soon began to provide information on key al-Qaeda operatives, including information that helped us find and capture more of those responsible for the attacks of 9/11. For example, Zubaydah identified one of KSM's accomplices in the 9/11 attacks, a terrorist named Ramzi Ben al-Shib. The information Zubaydah provided helped lead to the capture of Ben al-Shib, and together these two terrorists provided information that helped in the planning and execution of the operation that captured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. An updated CIA validation document concurring with the proposed passage provided a modified list of CIA cables as sources to support the passage. Cable citations to Abu Zubaydah's reporting prior to the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques were removed. Like the previous version, the CIA's updated validation document did not cite to any cables demonstrating that information from Abu Zubaydah helped lead to the capture of Ramzi Ben al-Shib. Similarly, none of the cables cited to support the passage indicated that information from Abu Zubaydah and Ramzi Ben al-Shib, who was in foreign government custody when he provided the information cited by the CIA, helped in the planning and execution of the operation that captured KSM. As described elsewhere in this summary, there are no CIA records to support these claims. The CIA documents validating the president's speech addressed other passages that were likewise unsupported by the CIA's cited cables. For example, the speech included an inaccurate claim regarding KSM that had been part of the CIA's representations on the effectiveness of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques since 2003. The speech stated, once in our custody, KSM was questioned by the CIA using these procedures, and he soon provided information that helped us stop another planned attack on the United States. During questioning, KSM told us about another al-Qaeda operative he knew was in CIA custody, a terrorist named Majid Khan. KSM revealed that Majid Khan had been told to deliver $50,000 to individuals working for a suspected terrorist leader named Hambali, the leader of al-Qaeda's Southeast Asian affiliate known as JI. CIA officers confronted Khan with this information. Khan confirmed that the money had been delivered to an operative named Zubair and provided both a physical description and contact number for this operative. Based on that information, Zubair was captured in June of 2003, and he soon provided information that helped lead to the capture of Hambali. As support for this passage, the CIA cited a June 2003 cable describing a CIA interrogation of Majid Khan in which Majid Khan discussed Zubair. The CIA validation document did not include cable citations from March 2003 that would have revealed that Majid Khan provided this information while in foreign government custody prior to the reporting from KSM. On September 6, 2006, President Bush delivered the speech based on the CIA-vetted information.
Note, 1168. On April 29, 2009, Mark Thiessen, the speechwriter responsible for President Bush's September 6, 2006 speech, wrote, "This was the most carefully vetted speech in presidential history, reviewed by all the key players, from the individuals who ran the program all the way up to the Director of National Intelligence, who personally attested to the accuracy of the speech in a memo to the president." And just last week on Fox News, former CIA Director Michael Hayden said he went back and checked with the agency as to the accuracy of that speech and reported, "We stand by our story."
On September 8, 2006, the chief of the redacted department in CTC, redacted, who had participated in the CIA's validation of the speech, distributed the final validation document for possible updates or changes. In an email, redacted urged the recipients to please look very carefully, as this is going to be a very important document. On September 11, 2006, a CIA officer responded questioning the passage in the speech related to the capture of KSM, as well as the relevance of the CIA cable cited in the validation document to support the passage. The CIA officer questioned whether a CIA cable describing Ramzi bin Ashib's identification of Ammar supported the claim that bin Ashib's reporting helped lead to the capture of KSM. The officer wrote, "I presume the information in this cable that supports the statement is Ramzi's admission regarding Ammar. Did that actually help lead us to KSM? Not sure who did this section, but we may want to double-check this and provide additional cables on how this actually assisted us." This also seems to be a point critics in the press seem to be picking on. I will do some digging on my own as well. There are no CIA records to indicate that the CIA officer's comments about the inadequate sourcing were further addressed. As described in this summary, and in more detail in Volume 2, there are no CIA records to support the passage in the speech related to the capture of KSM. After the speech, press accounts challenging aspects of the speech became the subject of internal discussion among some CIA officers. On September 7, 2006, the chief of the redacted department in CTC, redacted, sent an email stating, "The New York Times has posted a story predictably poking holes in the president's speech, defending the passage in the speech, asserting that after the use of the CIA's enhanced interrogation techniques, Abu Zubaydah provided information that helped lead to the capture of bin Ashib." Redacted explained, "We knew Ramzi bin Ashib was involved in 9/11 before AZ was captured. However, AZ gave us information on his recent activities that, when added into other information, helped us track him." Again, on this point,